Hello and welcome to the Risk Map podcast for the beginning of October 2014, brought to you by Control Risks, the global political integrity and security risk consultancy. I'm Charles Hecker, Global Research Director based here in London, where I'm joined this week by Managing Director for Global Risk Analysis, Michael Moran, visiting from his usual perch in New York City.
Hi, Chuck. Glad to be here in the still United Kingdom. This week, we'll consider the very close presidential election in Brazil, a visit to the United States by India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, and ask what the arrest of one of Russia's wealthiest oligarchs says about the country's tumultuous business environment.
Mike, let's start with the Indian Prime Minister's visit to the United States. With the UN General Assembly's opening session at the end of September, Modi is hardly the only world leader in the neighborhood. But Mike, what makes this visit a little bit different?
Well, as they say, size matters. It really does. And India and the United States, of course, are the world's largest democracies. They are also potential strategic allies in many ways, both economically and, of course, in East Asia, where India has struggled to develop a relationship that is based on its growing trade with China and keeps it from being sucked into a kind of containment alliance that in some cases it looks like the United States is trying to stitch together. So there's a lot to talk about in that regard. India and Japan have become closer. India and Australia have become closer. Naval exercises take place regularly now with the United States Navy, which is, of course, the most powerful force in the region. So there is a lot of talk about China and its maritime disputes and its interests in the region. On the other hand, India has recently, for instance, awarded a fighter plane contract to the French rather than to the United States. India is wary of getting too close to the U.S. and appearing almost as the United States' proxy in the region. That's not the role India seeks, and it wouldn't be a popular role within India anyway.
Mike, Modi, like all of the other world leaders, is in New York, the United States' commercial capital. What's on his business agenda while he's in town?
Well, he's doing something quite interesting. Indians or Indian Americans make up about 1% of the U.S. population, but they're a very relatively affluent and influential 1%. He's gathering these people in Madison Square Garden for a kind of Indian pep rally. And it's something unprecedented. It's got people from Silicon Valley, from the South, from all corners of the United States traveling to New York to bask in their pride and to talk really serious business with India's leader, who rides into power with his own reputation of getting things done on behalf of business. So it's a very interesting move by the Prime Minister, and it will bring even greater spotlight within the United States on the success that Indian Americans have had there.
Thanks, Mike. We look forward to the results of this trip when the Prime Minister heads back to India, and I'm sure we'll be returning to this topic again in the very near future. Let's move on. Even as the fighting in eastern Ukraine has calmed a bit, Russia's internal political turmoil continues, this time with the arrest of Vladimir Yevtushenkov. Yevtushenkov is one of Russia's richest and best-connected oligarchs and is the head of AFK Systema, one of Russia's largest conglomerates. Joining me in London is Stephen Eek, our senior Russia analyst. Steve, the arrest of Vladimir Yevtushenkov set off shockwaves through the Russian business community. Is this a return to the days of the government seizure of Yukos, cast your mind back, and the arrest of Mikhail Khodorkovsky?
No, it's not. I think the two are actually quite separate, Charles, and they're not comparable. And the reason, one essential reason why I actually believe that's the case, namely that the former head of the Yukos oil giant, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, had emerged in the public space and in the media as a direct political and personal challenge to Vladimir Putin. He was leading, if you remember, Kirst, your mind back to that time, a liberal campaign that was opposed to the kind of statist and nationalist politics being pursued by Putin. Yevtushenkov has never done anything of the sort, anything comparable. In fact, in public and in private, he's gone out of his way to court a good working personal relationship with Putin and people in his immediate entourage. And I actually believe this is being driven by something completely different, namely the determination of the head of Rosneft, Igor Sechin, who is one of the brains behind Putin's actions since 2012, to take over Bashneft, the big oil giant based in Bashkortostan in central Russia that Yevtushenkov has consistently refused to cede to Rosneft over recent years.
But still, this is a pretty big figure. Yevtushenkov is a major Russian player. What has been the reaction of his colleagues? How is the Oligarchs Club reacting to his house arrest?
In a really surprising way, just last week, a few days ago, a group of oligarchs from one of the Russian Black Sea resorts where they were holding a meeting came out publicly to say that this is politically motivated, it destabilizes the business environment, it further complicates doing business in Russia at a time when the country is hit by fairly significant Western sanctions, and it also, just as importantly, upsets the balance that was reached at the beginning of the 2000s between Putin and the oligarchs, which basically said, you keep out of politics, I keep out of your business interests. We see 13, 14 years on that equation is now slowly starting to shift with, I think, quite unpredictable consequences, both for Russian and international business.
Steve, what's the message in all of this for the international business community?
I think there are two messages, Charles. The first one is, let's see how the conduct of the court proceedings against Yevtushenko go. One of the big questions about doing business and investing in Russia is that the court system is not impartial and it does not give you adequate protection of your property rights. Let's see what happens to Yevtushenko, whether he gets a fair hearing, whether observers are allowed to sit in on the trial, and whether they decide that it is free and fair and it gives adequate voice to all the involved sides. The second one is, let's be prepared for change in the elites right at the top of Russian governance. We've come to see this as a stable, if not stagnating, system. I think events connected to Yevtushenko and Sechin's role, Rosneft and Bashneft, show us that actually behind the scenes there is turbulence, there are tensions between competing clans, not at the stage yet of feuding between them, or at least open public feuding between them, but things are beginning to shift. We should not see this system Putin presides over as entirely ossified.
Stephen Eek in London, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Finally, the Brazilian presidential election, slated to begin two rounds on 5 October, is turning out to be a close-run affair. Incumbent Dilma Rousseff of the Brazilian Workers' Party was once considered a prohibitive favorite. But a one-time Rousseff ally, Marina Silva, has transformed the race and has a real chance of winning. Joining me from Sao Paulo to discuss this is Control Risk's Brazil analyst, Tomás Favaro. Tomás, let's say Marina Silva is successful and wins in the runoff election later in the month. How does this change things for someone who's doing business in Brazil?
There are a couple of significant changes that look likely to happen in the horizon. The first and most important one is the question of economic management. Marina Silva has had very strong criticism towards the economic policy by Dilma Rousseff, the fact that inflation has been running so high and economic growth so low, and also that the fact that the government has lost so much credibility in the international community with overly optimistic economic forecasts. So she suggests a much more orthodox economic policy making. Another promise of her electoral campaign, which is a bit less tangible, it's a different way of doing politics and, let's say, put a break on all the horse trading and pork barreling that currently takes place in Congress.
Well, Tomás, let's say Dilma Rousseff holds off this challenge and wins. Does she take from this close election any lessons that are going to be showing up as policy changes, maybe in the regulatory sphere or anti-corruption or anything that you see that this election is going to force her to do if she wins?
She already made clear that her finance minister will be changed, but to what extent will that translate into significant differences in economic policy? That remains to be seen. In terms of corruption risks, this is not as partisan as one would expect. There's a more sustained drive in the background against corruption that involves a much larger number of state institutions that are not necessarily that influenced by the government and who are keen on, let's say, implementing anti-corruption legislation in Brazil. The public prosecutor's office is very keen on enforcing that legislation and has made very significant steps in the right direction. So even though that a re-election of Dilma may potentially perpetuate some of the practices we see in Congress and even within the executive, within the cabinet, I think there's also something that goes a bit beyond this current administration, and it's actually translates into a shift in even Brazilian society to a certain extent in actually tackling corruption and making sure that integrity risks are on the decline in the longer run.
Well, Tomás, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mike, before we sign off, a few other items of interest in the fortnight ahead. On the 29th of September, the U.S. 7th Fleet and the Philippine Navy hold joint exercises in the vicinity of shoals claimed by China. A former Norwegian Prime Minister, Jens Stoltenberg, takes the reins as NATO's new Secretary General on Wednesday, the 1st of October. And finally, on Sunday, the 5th of October, we're having a general election in Bulgaria.
Well, that's it for now. We hope you enjoyed the latest edition of Risk Map Podcast, produced by Control Risks, the global political integrity and security risk consultancy. It's available every other Friday on iTunes or via the Control Risks website, www.controlrisks.com.
From London, this is Charles Hecker, signing off for now.
And this is Michael Moran, on behalf of my colleagues in 36 offices around the world. Thanks for listening, and until next time, goodbye.